Welcome to this Thursday edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. Coming up in feature reports on today's show, we will hear about failed federal water policy in Northern California's Klamath Basin growing region and a report on drip irrigation research from the University of California's Desert Research and Extension Center. A check-in of national and regional agricultural news also coming up, and we start with that regional ag news report right after this.
Health and water holding capacity. Adding phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10%. Optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with phycoterra.
According to the latest U.S. Department of Agriculture National Agricultural Statistics Service California Crop Progress and Condition Report, last week, average lows for California ranged from 24 to 39 degrees in the mountains, 32 to 69 in a desert, 34 to 57 along the coast, and 38 to 56 in a central valley. Average highs for the state range from 36 to 69 in the mountains, 54 to 85 along the coast, 60 to 82 in a central valley, and 61 to 102 in a desert. From the California Department of Water Resources, snowpack water content in the northern Sierra was 8.10 inches compared to 5.60 inches this time last year. Central Sierra was 10.90 inches compared to 8.20 inches this date last year. Southern Sierra was 4.80 inches compared to 3.20 inches this time last year. California DWR CIMIS stations recorded 1,352 chill hours at Gerber, 1,258 chill hours at Williams, 1,329 chill hours at Holt, 1,591 chill hours at Merced, and 1,332 chill hours at Fresno, along with 1,124 chill hours at Arvin. Some stone fruit orchards were thinned and irrigated. Spraying took place in preparation of the upcoming season. Cherries were maturing on the peak of harvest. Apricots, apples, pears, peaches, plums, nectarines, and prunes continued to leaf out. Grape and kiwi bloom continued. Persimmon, pomegranate, and quince trees were budding. Orange bloom was reportedly complete in Tulare County with possible effects on the crop due to warm weather. Valencia and navel oranges, tangelo, grapefruit, lemon, and mandarin harvests were underway. Seedless tangerine groves remain netted to prevent cross-pollination where needed. Avocado and olive trees were steadily blooming. Young strawberry crops were covered with plastic. Blueberry and blackberry steadily matured. Almonds were affected by the frost, more so in some areas than others, but the crop quality overall remains in good standing in comparison to last year. Walnut and pistachio leaf out was ongoing. Celery harvest had been steady in the southern part of the state. Quantity was reported better than average. In Stanislaus County, vegetables were sold at local farmers markets. In Tulare County, leaf lettuce harvest continued. Onions, fava beans, eggplants, squash, zucchini, sweet corn, and garlic continued to grow. University of California Agriculture and Natural Resources will be recruiting 16 new UC Cooperative Extension specialists over the next 12 months. This is in addition to the 5 UCCEE specialist positions released for recruitment last fall and 2 co-funded UCCE specialist positions since May of 2021, one in partnership with the UC Merced and another UC Davis School of Veterinary Medicine. To date, 106 UCCE specialist and advisor positions have been released since spring of 2021, thanks to increased 2021 to 2022 state funding. The positions are located in communities across California. Specialists perform research on campus with other campus-based academics and in the field with UCCE advisors who work directly with farmers, families, and other Californians. Currently, UCANR and UCCE specialists located on 6 campuses, UC Berkeley, UC Davis, UC Riverside, UC Santa Barbara, UC Santa Cruz, and UC Merced, and UCANR's research and extension centers and in county offices. The new UC Cooperative Extension specialist positions are agricultural toxicology specialist at the UC Davis of Veterinary Medicine, Molecular Biosciences, and CAES Department of Environmental Toxicology. Agroecology specialist at the UC Santa Cruz Center for Agroecology and Department of Environmental Studies. A climate resilience and labor specialist at the UC Berkeley School of Public Health, dairy cattle production health and management economics specialist at UC Davis School of Veterinary Medicine, teaching and research in Tulare County, Diseases of Nursery Greenhouse and Native Crop Specialist at the UC Davis Department of Plant Pathology. Economics of Diversity and Equity Specialist at UC Berkeley Department of Agricultural and Resource Economics. Economics of Food Supply Chain Specialist at the UC Davis Department of Agricultural and Resource Economics. Engineered Wood Products and Design Specialist at the UC Berkeley Department of Environmental Science, Policy and Management. Food Crop Safety Specialist, UC Riverside Department of Microbiology and Plant Pathology. Nutrition and Health Equity Specialist, UC Davis, CAES Department of Nutrition. Regenerative Agricultural Specialist at the UC Merced Department of Life and Environmental Sciences. A Soil Health Specialist at UC Davis Department of Land, Air and Water Resources. Subtropical Fruit Crop IPM Specialist at the UC Riverside Department of Entomology. An Urban Quality Health and Justice Specialist at the UC Irvine Department of Civil and Environmental Engineering. A Water Equity and Adaption Policy Specialist at UCLA Luskin Center for Innovation. And Weed Science Specialist at UC Riverside CNAS Department of Botany and Plant Sciences. A full list of positions can be found on the University of California Davidson of Agriculture and Natural Resources webpage. Representatives of the California Blueberry Commission traveled to Washington, D.C. last month to conduct meetings with numerous members of Congress to discuss the California blueberry industry's official position on important topics including immigration, food safety, trade, transportation, logistics, labor, and pesticide policies, among other issues. It was an opportunity to highlight many of the important issues for the blueberry industry in an effort to obtain additional support in the upcoming Farm Bill and other relevant legislation. The U.S. Department of Agriculture's Natural Resources Conservation Service in California is seeking proposals through June 1st for on-farm conservation innovation trials. On-farm trials, part of the agency's Conservation Innovation Grant Program, feature collaboration between NRCS and partners to implement on-the-ground conservation activities and then evaluate their impact. Incentive payments are provided to producers to offset the risk of improving innovative approaches. California SIG application packages are due via grants.gov by 11:59 p.m. Pacific time on June 1st. The agency anticipates making selections by June 30th and expects to execute awards by August 19th. FY 2022 USDA NRCS Conservation Innovation Grants Competition for California presentation will be available April 27th. A total of up to $400,000 is available for the California SIG competition in FY 2022. Projects may be between 1 and 3 years in duration, with a maximum award amount for a single award in FY 2022 to be $150,000.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
With a report on failed federal water policy in Northern California's Klamath growing region, here's Taylor Chalstrom.
The federal government announced earlier this month that it will deprive highly fertile farms and ranches in the Klamath Basin of irrigation water necessary to produce food this year. The decision comes at a time of global food security fears, rapidly rising food prices, and concerns that grocery store shelves may become empty this year. Rigid operating guidelines mandated by federal regulatory agencies mean that family farms and ranches that farm near the basin will have an uncertain amount of water, probably less than 15% of what they need, although producers will not know finally how much water they will have until it is far too late to plan their operations. Some might not know just how important the Klamath Basin is to agriculture in the state.
This area serves, produces a number of crops. The climate is sort of high desert. It's about 4,000 feet, and so it grows very high quality crops such as potatoes, onions, alfalfa that are just really renowned for their water quality. And it's, of course, I mean, they're renowned for their quality. And it's the really economic engine and backbone of this part of the state, of this part of Northern California, Southern Oregon.
That was Paul Simmons, an attorney that works with the Klamath Water Users Association. Him and Klamath Water Users Association leaders say that there is adequate water available this year to provide irrigation from Upper Klamath Lake to the Klamath Project, but federal regulators intend to deny irrigation water needed to produce food and divert it to other means.
All of that water is being redirected away from irrigation to endangered species, threatened endangered species, in Upper Klamath Lake, which serves as our water storage reservoir, and in the Klamath River. So whereas in past droughts of this magnitude, we've had available as much as 400,000 acre feet of water for irrigation, because of the Endangered Species Act constraints, we're looking at about 50,000 acre feet of water that will be available. So barely enough to work with, to try to do anything with. That means zero water for many, many farmers, and not enough for any farmers.
Of course, the federal government isn't removing all water allocations from the basin. There are still some farms and ranches in the area that will get irrigation water, but who gets that water depends on a couple of factors.
The way that it's distributed is a function of legal requirements and geography and topography in a way, and it's not simple when it's all said and done. There are, from the federal government's perspectives, priorities among contractors such that some are entitled to all of their water before others are entitled to any. But the way the system works isn't really set up to make it happen that way necessarily. So right now, the three districts that are do the majority of the diversion of water and conveyance of water are working very hard to just try to optimize the situation as best they can, in circumstances that no one has ever seen before in terms of this kind of water availability.
As a result of these water cuts by the federal government, the United States Bureau of Reclamation announced that there will be $20 million available to help mitigate economic damage to farms that do not use irrigation water this year. While the Klamath Water Users Association expressed its gratitude for said funding, local irrigators have lamented that dollars cannot replace the loss of food production, jobs, and community stability.
People who agree not to irrigate even a drop will be eligible for some of that funding. And so for some people, it means they'll be here next year when they might not have otherwise been here. It'll pay, maybe they can make the mortgage payment. In terms of the overall economy and the dynamics and the viability of farming operations, it's I call it a tourniquet. Some people say that it's a Band-Aid. I call it a tourniquet that will get you to the emergency room and hope so would be find a you can find a cure before you expire. So, you know, obviously it doesn't, the funding doesn't go to farm employees, some of whom have been here for decades or generations, doesn't go to local governments, doesn't go to the seed dealer, doesn't go to the equipment dealer. And so you start to have this kind of crumbling from within in terms of the local agricultural economy. And if you don't have a seed dealer, what do you do, right? And in the future. So, and there are also producers who have worked very hard over the years to earn contracts with, whether it's a grocery store or a potato chipper or what have you. And if you become an unreliable supplier, you lose those contracts. And that has happened. And there's a great concern about that happening here for people who have, like I say, worked really hard to earn those contracts.
Simmons said one of the main arguments against these water reallocations from the Klamath Basin is that the benefits that the government says the water is doing is not actually occurring.
This has been going on for about 20 years now, the repurposing of the irrigation water to increase the amount of water available for ESA-listed species. There's not a speck of evidence that that's actually benefited any of these species. So, you know, we could say this would be a hard policy argument if we had that kind of evidence, but we don't. So we're going off of individuals' judgments and tons of advocacy all over the place in terms of where this stuff lands. It's crippling irrigation communities. It's crippling hundreds of species of wildlife that rely on the same water supply as the farms, including two national wildlife refuges. And it's not doing a bit of good for the target, the handful of target species that are causing the regulations. So we say it all the time, show me something. I truly am from Missouri. Show me something to say this has done some good. And then the discussion would be a difficult one. We don't have that. We don't have evidence that it's done any good.
As for a solution to the issue, Simmons said it's a matter of changing existing water policy.
In the immediate future, there is a certain plan called the Interim Operations Plan, which has guided this last few years very poorly. We need to make sure that that plan goes away for good. We need to make sure that decision makers can see with absolute clarity and uninfluenced by the politics of the situation, just where we really are and how we really got here, because it's really very messed up, and it's hard to even articulate what the rules are for operating the project or how decisions are made. So we need to shine light on that. And I don't mean that in a political way. It just needs to be seen clearly, and whether that needs to be seen clearly in meetings or briefings or hearings, I don't know, but those are the two most important things to restore a bit of stability. We're working hard on infrastructure improvements that will improve efficiencies. This is a very efficient project as it stands, but it will improve efficiencies further and improve operational efficiencies, which is something that can be very important to the timing of use of water that is increasingly important in the way that we interact with the Endangered Species Act.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, delivering value to growers and handlers with advocacy, research programs, and walnut promotions. Doing more together.
In national agricultural news, leaders of the Agriculture Department and Environmental Protection Agency began the White House Rural Infrastructure Tour this week. USDA Ag News reporter Rod Bain.
Tuesday, touring at a rural public utility facility and announcing investments in six watershed infrastructure projects in the state. Secretary Vilsack notes the importance of USDA and EPA working together to address issues.
We have major challenges, and they can't be solved if I'm in my silo and he's in his silo and those silos never talk.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Tai met with her counterpart in the United Kingdom this week as part of the second U.S.-UK trade dialogue. While not official trade negotiations, the dialogue's focused on the future of trade between the two countries. Ambassador Tai and U.K. Secretary of Agriculture Anne-Marie Trevelyan hosted a series of roundtable discussions with a group of stakeholders from the U.S. and U.K. business community. The trade officials agreed to build resilience in supply chains, address the global trade impacts of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, and promote environmental protection, among other topics. Drawing on the stakeholder discussions and bilateral talks, the duo directed their teams to work at pace over the next several weeks to develop an ambitious roadmap with economically meaningful outcomes in these areas. Other focus areas include labor and environmental standards, promoting innovation and economic growth. Tai and Trevelyan previously held a similar trade dialogue in March. USA Rice recently submitted comments to the Surface Transportation Board outlining several rail shipping issues impacting the industry. The comments urge STB to take lasting actions to resolve and prevent the issues from reoccurring. The comments highlighted the rice industry's predicament of low rice prices and ever-increasing input costs, record high inflation, and lower production forecasts for 2022. The rice industry has made a push over the last several years for customers to use rail over other methods of transportation, given its efficiency. However, ongoing issues, including rail congestion, labor shortages, marginal equipment, and the lack of box and hopper cars to ship rice, is hampering the industry's ability to do so and causing shippers to resort to other less efficient and costly methods of transportation. The issues have resulted in crushing losses not only to rice shippers, but also rice end users that have been forced to shut down production due to rice shortages. USDA's Food and Nutrition Service has announced $5 million in competitive grants that are available to enhance efficiency and access in the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. The SNAP Process and Technology Improvement multi-year grants seek to improve the experience of SNAP participants by enabling grantees to update inefficient or ineffective processes or use technology to streamline operations. The application process also requires grant applicants to demonstrate how their initiatives will affect SNAP with respect to equity and inclusion. Stacy Dean, USA's Deputy Undersecretary for Food, says FNS is deeply committed to improving SNAP so that all Americans can get the healthy food they need. Previous grantees have used funding for SNAP improvements, such as making mobile applications easier to use, implementing live call centers, or creating automated text messaging notifications to remind households of key actions required to maintain benefits. The application process is open now, and the three-year grants will be announced this fall. Trade topics are getting some attention in Washington, D.C. Farm News reporter Michael Clements shares more on what the American Farm Bureau Federation is following right now.
Trade is always a hot topic in agriculture, and the American Farm Bureau Federation says there are three issues to watch right now. Dave Salmonson, AFBF Senior Director of Government Affairs, says President Biden recently signed legislation changing the trade relationship between the U.S. and Russia.
The first legislation basically stops us from importing energy from Russia. Second bit of legislation revokes what's called permanent normal trade relations with Russia. What that means is that we have granted Russia, like we grant 160-plus other countries around the world, the exact same tariff treatment. So now the U.S. is free to impose different tariffs going forward on Russia, falling back to our tariff schedule we had with them before they had this status.
Meanwhile, U.S. Trade Representative Katherine Tai is holding trade dialogues with the United Kingdom.
These aren't formal trade negotiations, but the U.S. and the U.K. have settled some trade disputes based on the imposition of steel tariffs a few years ago. That's been resolved. Farm Bureau supports having a full-fledged trade agreement with the United Kingdom, hopefully getting rid of some of their standards barriers they have to various exports, especially meat products. So we're hopeful that these initial talks will lead to formal trade negotiations sometime soon.
And Salmonson adds, the U.S. Section 301 tariffs on Chinese imports could be addressed soon.
We've heard from Treasury Secretary Yellen, officials in the National Security Council and the White House saying maybe it's time to revisit those tariffs to help trade. We in agriculture have been against those tariffs because of the retaliation. And even though they waived a lot of that because of the China-U.S. Phase 1 agreement, the purchase commitment of that agreement is over, and the potential to reimpose tariffs lingers out there.
Michael Clements, Washington.
The Renewable Fuels Association detailed how poor rail service is having a negative impact on the entire ethanol industry in written testimony sent to the Surface Transportation Board. The STB held public hearings on the issue, which wrapped up yesterday. The majority of the ethanol produced in the U.S., over 70%, is transported via railway to its final destination across the lower 48 states, as well as Canada and Mexico. U.S. railroads typically transport more than 370,000 carloads of ethanol per year, accounting for almost 3% of total U.S. rail ton miles. Thus, the industry is heavily reliant on efficient and timely rail car service, according to RFA President and CEO Jeff Cooper. And with the crisis in Ukraine and the subsequent concerns regarding instability in the U.S. and global energy supplies, it is imperative that the robust supply of lower-cost American-made ethanol safely and efficiently reaches fuel consumers in a timely manner, according to Cooper.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
Sierra Paul Hemus is in with a report on drip irrigation research at the University of California's Desert Research and Extension Center.
Klamath Basin of irrigation water necessary to produce food this year. The decision comes at a time of global food security fears, rapidly rising food prices, and concerns that grocery store shelves may become empty this year. Rigid operating guidelines mandated by federal regulatory agencies mean that family farms and ranches that farm near the basin will have an uncertain amount of water, probably less than 15% of what they need, although producers will not know finally how much water they will have until it is far too late to plan their operations. Some might not know just how important the Klamath Basin is to agriculture in the state.
This area serves, produces a number of crops. It's the climate is sort of high desert. It's about 4,000 feet. And so it grows very high quality crops such as potatoes, onions, alfalfa that are just really renowned for their water quality. And it's, of course, they're renowned for their quality. And it's the really economic engine and backbone of this part of the state of this part of Northern California, Southern Oregon.
That was Paul Simmons, an attorney that works with the Klamath Water Users Association. Him and Klamath Water Users Association leaders say that there is adequate water available this year to provide irrigation from Upper Klamath Lake to the Klamath Project, but federal regulators intend to deny irrigation water needed to produce food and divert it to other means.
All of that water is being redirected away from irrigation to endangered species, threatened and endangered species, in Upper Klamath Lake, which serves as our water storage reservoir, and in the Klamath River. So whereas in past droughts of this magnitude, we've had available as much as 400,000 acre feet of water for irrigation, because of the Endangered Species Act constraints, we're looking at about 50,000 acre feet of water that will be available. So barely enough to work with, to try to do anything with. That means zero water for many, many farmers, and not enough for any farmers.
Of course, the federal government isn't removing all water allocations from the basin. There are still some farms and ranches in the area that will get irrigation water, but who gets that water depends on a couple of factors.
The way that it's distributed is a function of legal requirements and geography and topography in a way, and it's not simple when it's all said and done. There are, from the federal government's perspectives, priorities among contractors such that some are entitled to all of their water before others are entitled to any. But the way the system works isn't really set up to make it happen that way necessarily. So right now, the three districts that do the majority of the diversion of water and conveyance of water are working very hard to just try to optimize the situation as best they can, in circumstances that no one has ever seen before in terms of this kind of water availability.
As a result of these water cuts by the federal government, the United States Bureau of Reclamation announced that there will be $20 million available to help mitigate economic damage to farms that do not use irrigation water this year. While the Klamath Water Users Association expressed its gratitude for said funding, local irrigators have lamented that dollars cannot replace the loss of food production, jobs, and community stability.
People who agree not to irrigate even a drop will be eligible for some of that funding. And so for some people, it means they'll be here next year when they might not have otherwise been here. It'll pay, maybe they can make the mortgage payment. In terms of the overall economy and the dynamics and the viability of farming operations, I call it a tourniquet. Some people say it's a Band-Aid. I call it a tourniquet that will get you to the emergency room and hope so would be you can find a cure before you expire. So, you know, obviously the funding doesn't go to farm employees, some of whom have been here for decades or generations. Doesn't go to local governments, doesn't go to the seed dealer, doesn't go to the equipment dealer. And so you start to have this kind of crumbling from within in terms of the local agricultural economy. And if you don't have a seed dealer, what do you do, right, and in the future? So, and there are also producers who have worked very hard over the years to earn contracts with whether it's a grocery store or a potato chipper or what have you. And if you become an unreliable supplier, you lose those contracts. And that has happened. And there's a great concern about that happening here for people who have, like I say, worked really hard to earn those contracts.
Simmons said one of the main arguments against these water reallocations from the Klamath Basin is that the benefits that the government says the water is doing is not actually occurring.
This has been going on for about 20 years now, the repurposing of the irrigation water to increase the amount of water available for ESA-listed species. There's not a speck of evidence that that's actually benefited any of these species. So, you know, we could say this would be a hard policy argument if we had that kind of evidence, but we don't. So we're going off of individuals' judgments and tons of advocacy all over the place in terms of where this stuff lands. It's crippling irrigation communities. It's crippling hundreds of species of wildlife that rely on the same water supply as the farms, including two national wildlife refuges. And it's not doing a bit of good for the handful of target species that are causing the regulation. So we say it all the time, show me something. I truly am from Missouri. Show me something to say this has done some good. And then the discussion would be a difficult one. We don't have that. We don't have evidence that it's done any good.
As for a solution to the issue, Simmons said it's a matter of changing existing water policy.
In the immediate future, there is a certain plan called the Interim Operations Plan, which has guided this last few years very poorly. We need to make sure that that plan goes away for good. We need to make sure that decision makers can see with absolute clarity and uninfluenced by the politics of the situation, just where we really are and how we really got here, because it's really very messed up, and it's hard to even articulate what the rules are for operating the project or how decisions are made. So we need to shine light on that, and I don't mean that in a political way. It just needs to be seen clearly, and whether that needs to be seen clearly in meetings or briefings or hearings, I don't know, but those are the two most important things to restore a bit of stability. We're working hard on infrastructure improvements that will improve efficiencies. This is a very efficient project as it stands, but it will improve efficiencies further and improve operational efficiencies, which is something that can be very important to the timing of use of water that is increasingly important in the way that we interact with the Endangered Species Act.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing Team, thank you for listening.